Hey everybody, Don't Tread on Me episode coming right at you if you're with your favorite self-deprecating libertarian person here. I just wanted to start off the show from the last episode, and like I said, forgive me if I'm a little, you know, choppy here and there. You know, I'm not a pro at this. You know, just thought it would be fun to do some podcasting. I have strong opinionated views and thought, what the heck, why not try it out? Last episode, I talked a little bit about, or rambled, whatever the case might be, concerning populism and, you know, how we need to be careful about it, and in reference to, you know, our founding fathers and how our country is set up. And, you know, I want to, for a few minutes, actually flip it and talk about, with the whole nuance of the rise of Trump and a new form of kind of conservative slash populism with Trump and the Republican Party, how actually populism can be also a good thing, too, for the situation that we currently have in our country. And I think the main piece of where it can be positive is that there is an issue with establishmentism, if that's even a word, in our current government, you know, at all levels. I mean, we've seen it through the state and local government. I've seen it here in Western New York, you know, the Socialist Republic of New Yorkistan. I've seen it at, you can clearly see it at the Washingtonian level with the federal government. You can see it even in our judicial area where they're where, you know, especially over the Obama years, we've seen that basically the judges have turned themselves into actual de facto pseudo legislators. And, you know, populism could, and we have seen it, turn that on its head a little bit, especially with the whole Republican Party and the Republican establishment. You know, the question, of course, is can that carry over into the left, onto the Democratic side? Can it carry over into changing the judicial system? All of that remains to be seen, whether or not it's even possible. Because when you have an establishment like we have that has been ingrained for decades, how do you just flip the switch and change that over? Overnight. I think the answer is you can't. You just try and take incremental steps. But that being said, with the whole Trump election in the last couple years, we've seen that the populist movement and anti-establishment movement has taken a significant uptick and has become forefront. And you see a lot more and hear a lot more candidates, predominantly on the right, but I've even heard some, you know, on the left. But I'll admit I don't listen to a lot of left-wing commentary. I do here and there. There are some that I like, Juan Williams on the Five, for example, on Fox. But most of the time I don't listen to it because I'm just going to be honest with you. It's at least for my ideology, a lot of it is just so off base and wrong that it kind of makes my ears bleed a little bit, and it makes my soul kind of bleed a little bit. But I have seen it even come on the left that people are starting to say, whether they're a registered Republican or Democrat trying to come across for office, they are sensing frustration from the American people on the establishment and saying, hey, you know, I'm going to go and I'm going to fight the rhino Republicans and I'm going to fight the globalist Democrats and we're going to turn Washington on its head. That being said, you know, whether or not they're going to be able to do it, you know, their chances are probably small. You're going up against a huge behemoth, a huge lobby. You know, whenever you think about establishmentism for the Rhino Repubs or the Dems, you know, a lot of it goes right to lobbyism and the money. You know, you follow the money and that changes people. Like, for example, a great example of, in my opinion, of what I'm talking about with establishmentism is this whole tax bill. The GOP, the good old grand old party, is trying to pass, and the recent developments with Marco Rubio concerning, hey, guys, I'm not going to flip. I'm not going to give you my vote unless dot, 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 which is, you know, insert establishment person here, you know, on the child tax credit. Now, on the surface, hey, I got two young kids, a child tax credit. That doesn't sound too bad. Even though, hint, hint, the government shouldn't be taxing me anyways. you know, it's something that I can appreciate now. But why is Rubio kind of pushing for it at the 11th hour? Makes you think. I'm a Rubio fan, by the way. I like Rubio. I liked Rubio and Cruz over Trump in the primaries. In hindsight, I'm glad Trump won over those two, because I don't know if they would have been able to flip things like Trump can and have the and maybe have the change agent ability that Trump has. And we'll see where that goes. But you can see this effect of the establishment. And, of course, you know, I don't want to spend a ton of time on this, but, you know, of course, the biggest response that I'll get back from people when I debate this is they'll say, well, Neil, that's all well and good. I think everybody left, right, center, up, down the whole political diamond spectrum would agree. But, you know, what the hell are you going to do to change that establishment mentality? And I think the first thing, you know, the first thing is, you know, they kind of say this, what for, you know, is for any problem is admitting you have a problem. And I think for Washington, you know, if collectively they admitted they have a problem, I think that could go a long way with the people. I do believe people can change and they can alter practices. If they were more establishment, they can be now part of the solution. I think, you know, Trump himself has, you know, wanted to do that. But the problem is that so many people are kind of working against that. So, you know, the Mitch McConnells and the Paul Ryans, I think, are the worst cases of establishments. And then you have, you know, the Maxine Waters and the Nancy Pelosi's, you know, and I forgot what's her name. Elizabeth Warren. That's right. The woman who supposedly has been living in teepees for her whole life, but just recently realized it and has come to grips with that part of her past. You know, they're the same people. They're going to they have their base, whether they're Democrat or Republican, conservative, you know, liberal. But then basically they issue hot based on where the money is. And I think that, to me, the whole lobby structure, and by no means am I an expert on it, that I think is where we could really, really fix and poke into and peel back the onion of the problem of establishment politics that really is the fact that they're not answering to their constituents. They're responding to the lobbyists that they get. And I understand it. I mean, when from an economic perspective, you know, let's say I'm running for Congress or Senate or an assembly seat or whatever the case might be, locally, state, you know, federal level, and I have to print pictures, I have to print signage, I have to go on some speeches, I have to maybe travel a little bit, so I need money. And, you know, the person down the street, a core constituent, working, you know, mother, working father, whatever the case might be, they give me, you know, $5, but the big guy down the street gives me, you know, $100,000. And, you know, he has a particular policy that's really important to him that he needs an influence on, and he uses me as that proxy. You know, I can't say that I'm Mr. Amazing and that wouldn't impact me. So I think, you know, that's where you have to kind of understand where this problem comes from. It's about the money. It's about the lobby. It's about how money so often is what drives someone to win an election or retain incumbency. That's to me the big issue, is how do we reform that? So that's where, you know, if you think about it, there's many different ways you can attack that. You know, we already have limits on contributions and who can contribute and that sort of thing. But I think some of the framework for doing this to weed out the establishment is there. The question just is who or what can keep pushing it. And I think just like anything, I think we the people just need to keep putting in those anti-establishment people. People who won't respond back to the lobby as much. And when you get at least a critical mass of those people, hopefully legislatively, you can start to change some of these rules and regulations. Now, there's no doubt it's going to be extremely difficult, very difficult. Why? because the establishment's there and it's against them. One of the things people don't understand about the government, and we'll talk about this a lot in future episodes, and you'll hear if anybody, you know, cares to listen, is that the government truly does not care about you. And it's a hard principle for people to grasp that. But anybody who loves liberty has to come to grips with that. The government does not care about you. It cares about itself. It is a breathing entity that cares about self-preservation and self-growth. It is an anomaly unto itself. It is not this nebulous organization that is there to make your life better. And any politician that tells you that the government is there for that is wrong. Now, they can say that they are going to try and impact the government so that it does help you out. But don't fall into the trap that, oh, the government cares about me. I'm paying taxes so that, and I get back the taxes that I give. If you really truly believe that, the old adage of, I have a lot of swampland for you, comes to mind. And, you know, really, people might say on who are for big government on the left side, well, why do you, you know, what proof do you have? Well, the proof I have is basically over 200 and, you know, 30, 40 some odd years. If you look historically, you know, the government acts in its own self-interest far and above the people. If you look at the way we act economically, foreign policy, domestic policy, sometimes it comes in that what's right for the people and right for the government, very few and far between, but sometimes it does actually agree, but most of the time it doesn't. And I just think people have to understand that. And once you grasp that the government cares first and foremost about self-preservation and growth. It's very much in my view of how a union operates. An individual union may say that it cares about a company's interests, but first and foremost, it cares about itself and its membership. It cares about how the union is, how the union is progressing. What's the profit and loss statement of the union? Not necessarily of company X. And that's the same, you know, it's very similar principle to how the government works. The government, first and foremost, cares about self-preservation. And if you can understand that impact, I think you can understand where a lot of libertarian and small government type thinking, all the way even into minarchism, actually comes from. So with that, I just wanted to touch base a little bit on populism and anti-establishment. Next episode, I'm going to talk about Jerusalem and Trump's proclamation that Jerusalem is the capital of the state of Israel, even though there's a pretty big guy up in the clouds called Hashem, Yahweh, or God, as some people would call him, that actually proclaimed that capital, you know, several thousand years ago. But I did appreciate that Trump came out as well. And we're going to talk about that and how, if you, you know, read certain organizations' material, that is going to cause Armageddon, and it's going to cause the Mideast that's been peaceful and had no wars for the last, I don't know, 50, 60 years, to all of a sudden become a hot powder keg of an area in the world impacting global policy. So with that, you know, thanks for listening to Don't Tread on Me. And remember, the government that governs best governs least, or perhaps none at all. Take care.